A sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 12, 1989, entitled, The Purposes of God and the Tides of History. The scripture is Psalm 33. The text for the sermon is Psalm 33, verse 10. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
The wonder of the week through which we have just lived necessitates addressing it in the house of the Lord in order that we might reflect upon it in the light of eternity and in the light of the promises of God. So it was necessary simply to put aside the manuscript and to start over, because events like this are the events which move history along, and the kind of events that need to be illumined by the Word of God. What a wonderful week it has been. Our attention has been glued to the TV as we've watched the pictures of the wall coming down, as we've been participants at the party, as we have seen the joy and experienced the euphoria of a people who, for the first time for many of them, are tasting the wonder of freedom and the dignity of being human. It is an amazing event, an event that is unraveling so fast that the leaders of the world simply don't know where things are going, and I sort of hope that they don't find out too soon. Our own president, far too reticent, I feel, in these last months to capture the moment of a world that is exploding with ferment, finally, hastily, makes an appointment with a Soviet leader in order that they might have a saltwater summit. And before they can even meet, events have overtaken them. And finally, these two leaders of the two greatest nations, the most powerful nations in world history, will sit down together across the table and recognize that they may lead their nations, but events are in control of the unraveling of the drama of history. What a wonderful moment it is to reflect on the sovereignty of God and God's purposes in the course of human events. So, as I sat down to think about a text, I asked myself, if I were a pastor in East Germany today, what would I preach? And the passage that came to me was the passage I read a moment ago, Psalm 33, a wonderful call to praise and celebration, a call to the peoples of the earth, to Israel primarily, to bring praise to God with all of their art, enlisting their voices and instruments, celebrating the greatness of the wonder of God, the God who is spoken of as a God of faithfulness, a God of justice, a God of steadfast love, a God whose love fills the whole earth, a God who is marvelous in His word and wonderful in His works. The psalmist then goes on to speak about the wonder of God in creation, how God spoke, and it was so, how God gathered the seas together in a bottle or in a goat skin, how He put the heaps of the deep into a storehouse, in magnificent, vivid, poetic image, speaking about the sovereignty of the God who spoke, and it was so. And then, in verses 10 to 17, celebrating the marvel of the sovereignty of God and God's purposes in the course of history, the psalmist believed that the things that happen in the arena of history are not accidents on their way to happen, but rather the God who created all things continues to be attentive to the world that he has made. Listen for just a moment to those verses in the middle of the psalm. The Lord brings the plans of nations to nothing. He frustrates the counsel of the peoples. But the Lord's own plans stand forever, and God's counsel endures for all generations. And then he pictures the Lord in a most anthropomorphic sense as sitting in his throne room in heaven. The Lord looks out from heaven. He sees the whole human race. God surveys from his dwelling place all the inhabitants of the earth. It is God who fashions the hearts of all people alike, who discerns all that they do. And then he goes on to puncture the proud pretension of the princes of the earth. For the psalmist says, a king is not saved by a great army, nor a warrior delivered by great strength. A man cannot trust his horse to save him, nor can it deliver him for all its strength. No, it is not human planning, not human strategy, not human cleverness. It is God, God who finally calls the shots. Not Moscow, not Washington, not Beijing. It is God. It is God in whom we trust. The God who created, the God who sustains, and the God whose purpose stands forever. And so we live through the last few days, and we marvel at the events, unpredictable, exploding without warning. And what a joy it is to see the disruption in the nations. Friends, the world is falling apart. And in the falling apart of that world, I don't know about you, but I recognize how little faith I've had, how I have been afflicted myself by the numbness of despair, of believing finally that all depended upon human planning or human strategy or human projection. A world locked in ideological conflict, with arsenals at the ready. A world for four decades living in the atmosphere of Cold War, sometimes on the brink of hot war, and nowhere more dangerous than in Berlin, which has become the very navel of the confrontation of East and West. We who have lived in a world, we who believe in God, we have lived in a world where we would almost come to accept that it would be a world divided, that ideological conflict would go on forever, that there was nothing that we could do but arm to the gill and stand with weapons at the ready. We, the people of God, have too often lost the vision. We have been hopeless. We have been characterized by a sense of futility. And then suddenly, in a moment, the whole thing falls apart. The wall is broken down the people stream through, and we see something that is more real and more true than all of the lies to which we've capitulated all these many years. Where have we been, the people of God, who believe finally in shalom? The psalmist believed that God is sovereign, and that it is not finally guns or tanks or nuclear warheads or submarines, but it is God who looks down from the throne room of heaven and surveys all of the inhabitants of earth. It is God who frustrates the plans of nations and brings their counsel to naught. I almost forgot that. But in the euphoria of the last few days, I know again that nothing is impossible, and that the possibility of a whole new world presents itself to us if we'll have the courage to grasp the moment. Now I know that the reticence of world leaders now in power with admittedly great responsibility is only matched by my own reckless abandon to plunge in and capture the moment. Had I not been in England the last Sunday in May, Memorial Day Sunday, I probably would have spoken about democracy in China. And I would have had to come back a week or two later and to despair at the terrible crushing of the dream of the human heart. When I speak this morning, I give myself to the euphoria, but not naively nor simplistically. I recognize this morning that what I must affirm is the sovereignty of God in human history. And everything I say, I must be able to say not only on a weekend like this, but also in the face of the Hungarians of 1956 and the Prague Spring of 1968. And I know that tomorrow there could be a terrible turn of events. Yet, the movement, the release of the human spirit, has gone to such a point that the world will never be the same again. But I would not be naive. I would also say that all that I can say, I must be able to say before the survivor of the Holocaust. Those who lost their God in the gas furnaces of Dachau and Auschwitz. I would not be simplistic or naive, but I would say to you as biblical people that what we see in the disruption of the East and the West blocks, in the frustration of the ideological camps into which the world has been divided. What we see in the yearning of the human spirit for freedom. What we see. For example, even this morning as I was leaving the house where soldiers of East Berlin were moved out of the picture with their guns, and police of East Berlin and of West Berlin linked arms to hold the crowd back, the crowd that was surging to welcome those who were surging across the wall, where the police of the East and the West, with their arms linked, are a picture, are a sign of something that is truer more real, more ultimate than all of the guns and all of the tanks and all the nuclear weapons of the world. I would not be naive or simplistic this morning, but I would stand before you and call you to rejoice and to celebrate in the sovereignty of God, who is able to move into the disruption of nations, who is able to frustrate the plans and the counsels of the wisest statesman and the most savvy politician, and to bring about a new thing. For we are a people who, with the psalmist, believe that God is sovereign in the affairs of nations, not pulling strings, not making of us puppets, not intervening into the course of history to avoid all injustice or unrighteousness. Not so. Nevertheless, God, sovereign in the heavens, finally, with a plan and a purpose that is working itself out in the midst of human history, through us or in spite of us, a God who has a plan and a purpose, the vision of which is shalom. That beautiful picture, that wonderful dream, that dream that is more than the cessation of hostility, that dream that speaks of the positive harmony of creation and of creature and of all of the cosmos with the God who created it, that dream of the day when the lion and lamb will lie down together and when they will not hurt or destroy in all God's holy mountain. My dear people, we are a people who believe with the psalmist, who believe with the prophet, who have aligned ourselves too quickly with the power politics of our day, who have been caught up too much in being a part of the fabric of this world instead of being that gadfly in the midst of the world that keeps pointing to the dream and to the vision till finally the human spirit surges forth and finds the freedom with which God the Creator endowed it in the first place. This is a day in which the walls come tumbling down. This is a day in which the world is disheveled. This is a day in which there are no strategies. This is a day of new possibilities. And I call you as the people of God to pray as you've never prayed, and to harass whomever you can harass, and to cause those who lead us to claim the moment and to expect a new and a better world for our children than anything we've yet known. The psalmist ends appropriately. Let thy unfailing love, O Lord, rest upon us as we have put our hope in thee. Hope in God. God, the omnipotent, the King who ordaineth. 487.